We should pay more attention to what is deleted than what is reported. Truth does not fear investigation. Many years ago, in the military, I used to get a lot of speaking tours, and sometimes I'd be getting to 80 different military bases in one long speaking tour, including overseas. I was speaking to a Republic of China that's Free China, Taiwan, that's the good guys, a military intelligence officer who's visiting South Africa doing joint operations with us. And he observed that they pay far more attention to what gets deleted than what gets reported. Now that's quite insightful. Who can keep up with all that's getting published and printed? But whatever's getting banned, whatever's getting censored, whatever's getting deleted, that is what they focus on, because that's obviously significant and important. If somebody's going out of the way to try and delete or deplatform or unpublish something, that deserves special attention. Now, we are dealing with right now a tsunami of cancel culture war against civilization. But again, remind yourself of this key truth. Truth does not fear investigation. Why would you need laws or censors to stop people from having facts where they can have iron sharpening iron, examining the facts and the lights of debates and other sides? We don't fear debate. For example, when I've organized debates before, early on, we didn't have much problem in the 80s and even the beginning of the 90s to get debates with creationists versus the evolutionists. But not long after 1991 or so, you could not get an evolutionist willing to debate Dwayne Gish, for example, when you got out here, or Phil Stott, because they knew they couldn't stand up in an open debate. They would, if you invite them for a radio program or meeting, they'd be eager to come, but not if there's going to be equal time to a creation scientist. And so it was with the pro-aborts, and so it was with many others. They weren't willing to debate after all. I still got in a few debates with Dr. Marge Dyer, last one being famously in University of Stellenbosch, where in my debate on the right to life for preborn babies, I mentioned that my mother had been advised to abort me because she had been taking thalidomide, which back in 1959 was very common. I was born 1960 in January, and thalidomide babies were born almost all deformed, missing arms, legs, things like that. And so in a panic, even South Africa, where abortion was illegal, was allowing abortion, a case of mothers who'd been taking thalidomide, which is meant to deal with morning sickness. And as I said, my mother was advised to abort me. For the first time ever, I saw Dr. Marge Dyer's face just open in the biggest smile ever, and she said, for everyone to hear, what a pity she didn't. And that actually just shows you the mentality of why these people are not really pro-choice. They're not pro-choice, they're pro-abortion. In this era of political correctness, the cancel culture movement has promoted damaging monuments, destroying monuments, removing monuments. And you can see a real hostility against history. Renaming streets, renaming suburbs, deleting videos, removing articles, disinviting speakers, deplatforming people. Even one of the most popular people in the world in terms of numbers, who else has 34 million friends on Facebook? President Trump gets deplatformed while he's president, while he's got 34 million friends on Facebook, and just like that. But in one day, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Spotify, Instagram, the whole lot, they all deplatformed him simultaneously. I mean, isn't that just extraordinary, the coordination? All simultaneously. Deplatforming. At the same time, you had every single big tech group deplatformed Parler, for example, because Parler committed the unforgivable sin of not censoring content. They said they're not going to decide what people can put on there. It's without censorship. Go ahead. And suddenly, everyone from Google onwards, they're all just completely banned and deplatformed Parler. And so you can see what is going on in the world today. Banning, boycotting, blacklisting, even burning, not just books, but whole libraries. George Orwell declared 1984, the book 1984, the most effective way to destroy a people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. Whoever controls the past controls the future, because whoever controls the present controls the past. And so in other words, if you control the present, rewrite history so that you can control the future. That is how it works. All of this is the very opposite of free speech and debate. The people will believe what the media tells them they believe. In fact, we just saw that 2 nights ago, screening the film Roe v. Wade, where they literally sucked up out of their thumb statistics like 67% of Americans support abortion on demand, which was nowhere near vaguely the truth. 87% of doctors support abortion, which is not true. And they said they knew it wasn't true. They hadn't even done a study. They just sucked out their thumbs because it would be good. And they came out with statistics. 100,000 women have backstreet abortions every year. 10,000 women die of backstreet abortions every year. And these statistics are completely fraudulent. They did the same thing in South Africa. But they said it's a self-fulfilling lie because people like to be with the majority. Most people don't want to be with a minority. Most want to go with the herd. Go with the... I want to go along like dead fish floating downstream. They don't want to go against the stream. So if you tell them the majority of people, this, that, or the other, most people will tend to want to be with the majority. And so the people believe what the media tells them they believe. A thought crime does not entail death. Thought crime is death. Another quote from Orwell's 1984. Truth is the new hate speech. I don't know if you've noticed it, but during a time of universal deceit, telling the truth becomes a revolutionary act. And so you can find yourself unfriended and deplatformed and all sorts of things and disinvited just because you dare to tell the truth in a culture of deceit. Truth is hate for those who hate the truth. And so how many of you have had the experience in the last year of having something you posted deplatformed? This goes against community standards. Yeah? No? Well, obviously not enough of you are posting things. But we removed this post because it doesn't follow Facebook community standards. They have community standards? Yes, you're not allowed to have facts interfere with the official narrative, basically. Truth is hate for those who hate the truth. Hate speech is just free speech, which liberals don't like. The rising tide of intimidation and intolerance is leading to something akin to a new inquisition. Views and news which don't line up with the official narrative are routinely prohibited. Those who contradict the prevailing PC or political correctness culture and propaganda are punished. In the past, they had an inquisition where they'd burn you at the stake in the village square. These days, they've got modern equivalents of how you can get roasted by public opinion, so-called. The further society drifts from the truth, the more they'll hate those who speak the truth. And so today we do have a new inquisition, and it's irrational. In the name of facts, they will suppress facts. In the name of truth, they'll suppress truth. In the name of tolerance, they will show intolerance towards anyone who disagrees. It's completely hypocritical, it's completely irrational, but it's a new inquisition. And it's not only history that's being destroyed, it's lives that are being destroyed as well. I just heard this week, radio program yesterday that I was on in England, that an English radio personality, 67 years old, great-grandfather, jailed in England for saying something that offended someone. And they lock people up in Britain for saying something that someone is offended by. This is happening in Australia. It's happening in Canada. Students are being penalized. Teachers are being punished. Professors have lost their jobs. Teachers have lost their jobs. Students have been expelled from school for saying something which is honest and true, but which goes against the official narrative. For expressing such simple sentiments as there's only two genders, or marriage can only be between a man and a woman. That's enough. We removed this post because it doesn't follow Facebook community standards. Marriage equals one man plus one woman. What a shocking, horrific, hateful comment. How dare they post it there? It's going to undermine the whole fabric of society to state something like marriage can only be between one man and one woman. And so now we've got the rise of the thought police. Don't dare post that, we will ban you. I've had that. Just in the last year, the amount of things I've had, which you attempt to post that again, we will ban you. You know, it's not just put you in Facebook jail for a month, but you'll be totally deplatformed and banned if you attempt to post it again. And that particular post in that occasion was the video, the documentary on research and origins of the Wuhan virus. Freeze or we'll demonize you. You will be shadow banned. And so on and so on. And so the thought police on Facebook and YouTube and all over the place, Twitter, free speech is being censored by so-called fact checkers who don't do anything of the sort. They don't check the facts. It's not the facts being checked. It's the facts that are being banned and blacklisted because they don't suit the propaganda narrative. George Orwell called them thought police. Zuckerberg calls them fact checkers. And these fact checkers, what do they know about the field they're checking on? Are they scientists who're saying that a creation science position is not factual versus evolution? No, they're not. Are they bacteriologists and virologists? You can contradict the top bacteriologists and virologists in the world on what constitutes a true vaccine or virus and so on. No, they're not, but it doesn't fit the narrative. So they don't check the facts. They just check if the narrative fits the official PC propaganda narrative or not, and then they delete it. Fact checkers despise facts. What they're really doing is check and see, do you have facts? Then they remove it. The so-called fact checkers or censors of today were well described by George Orwell in his dystopian novel, 1984. In fact, today you find out that the people checking the facts are all just left-wing hacks. Ignorance is strength, freedom is slavery, and war is peace. That's the 1984 slogans, and today it's just the same. Hate speech is tolerance. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder sound respectable. It's not abortion, it's removal of the product of conception. It's a termination of pregnancy. It's a TOP, T-O-P, termination of pregnancy, removal of product of conception. It's not murdering civilians, it's collateral damage. It's not bombing of cities, it's a saturation bombing. And so it's not assassination, it's termination with extreme prejudice. And it's not an invasion, it's a technical incursion. And so the politicians keep coming out with new terms in order to... It's not a power failure, it's load shedding. And so there's the concept introduced in George Orwell's 1984 of being vaporized, disappearing down the memory hole. First published in 1949, George Orwell's 1984 book warns of the Ministry of Truth, or mini-truth, which he based on the BBC, which he worked for, of course, during the war. He was a propagandist himself. And the mini-truth would vaporize or expunge from the public record opponents of the state, which means opponents of the party, which couldn't be debated or argued against. And so they would vaporize people. They would become unpersons. So think of becoming unfriended today. Now, you became an unperson. And you disappear down the memory hole. And people simply disappeared during the night. Your name was removed from the registers. Every record of everything you'd ever done was wiped out. Your one-time existence was denied, then forgotten. You were abolished. You were annihilated. Vaporized was the usual word. This is Orwellian terminology in 1984. Now, George Orwell is worth quoting because he's almost prophetic. Bear in mind, he used to be a policeman. He was a communist. He became a propagandist, a journalist, and he worked for the BBC during the Second World War, producing propaganda. And so that's why the book 1984 is based in London, in Airstrip 1, as he called it, in Oceania. And he's projecting forward in the future about a technologically advanced society where people are constantly under government surveillance and being manipulated by the media in every way. And even their thoughts are controlled, and you can be punished for thought crimes. And that sounded pretty bizarre when I studied it as a textbook at school in the 1970s, but seeming awfully much like the politicians of today haven't seen 1984 as a warning, but rather as an instruction manual. Every monument would need to be replaced. Every street name would need to be changed. History itself would need to be rewritten in order to accord with the current policy of the ruling party. History has stopped. All that exists is an endless present in which the party is always right. The party is always right. That reminds you of a book by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, We Never Make Mistakes, quote from the Communist Party. Why? Because the Communist Party is God. The Communist Party is infallible. And so the party never makes mistakes. Because whatever the party says is right. They are the very gold standard of what is right and wrong. And that is the way it is if you're God-denying, God-hating, atheistic communist. The party is always right. Karl Marx declared the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. There is a sinister suppression of free speech. Now, of course, you expect that in Red China. In fact, those of us who try to do evangelism behind the bamboo curtain speak about the great firewall of China. You cannot get through into China using the internet gospel content. They block it and anything they consider subversive. And so you've got to actually get in because you can't breach the great firewall of China. That's what they speak about. So interesting at Google and so on, who've always flung up their hands and said, oh, we can't remove pornography from the internet because it's not possible. They could remove Christianity and the Bible and anything anti-communist from the entire internet portals going into Red China. So we know that these creeps lie. Yes, they can ban things, and they do. And Google is not just in bed with the communists, they're owned by them. Communist Party of China owns the whole bunch. Today, the sinister suppression of free speech, manipulation of language, intimidation of the population is becoming a real fact in everyday life. And for many people in Australia or Canada, this is becoming surreal. Some of you might have seen during the worst of the lockdown times last year, police in Australia went into a woman's house, a pregnant woman who was due to go to the hospital. They handcuffed her in front of her family who were filming this. And she said, but I haven't broken the law. I said, yes, ma'am, actually you have. What law have I broken? You posted on Facebook a recommendation of people not wear masks. Seriously? They arrested a pregnant mother in her home, handcuffed her and dragged away because of something she put on social media? Bizarre. They stopped a pastor in Canada and arrested him, had him kneeling down in the middle of traffic, swerving around in the middle of the road, handcuffing this pastor, who's not armed or resisting arrest or anything like that, and arresting him. Why? Because he doesn't wear a mask in church on Sunday. Now, this is the kind of insane world you're getting to. To silence opposition and to prevent free and open discussion, there are fact checkers. Well, who fact checks the fact checkers? Because the fact checks have been proven wrong on just about everything they've ever checked, especially concerning lockdown, the virus, and all the rest of it. The cancel culture PC movement are seeking to eradicate alternative opinions. You see, communists don't like competition. And there was a great bumper sticker a while ago I saw in America, do not steal. The government hates competition. They don't like competition in anything. And it's clear they couldn't manage in a real economy where there's free market or choices because they're such a bad choice, nobody would choose them unless it was compulsory. And they want to eliminate challenges to the politically correct propaganda narrative. And isn't it incredible how the cancel culture is getting corporate support in a tune of millions and hundreds of millions? Even groups like Amazon, after BLM burned down one of the Amazon distribution warehouses, they gave a massive donation to BLM thugs who had destroyed their whole warehouse. You know, just the mentality of these people is beyond comprehension. A well-researched documentary tracking down the origin of the Wuhan virus was deleted. And it was dismissed as false by fact-checkers, yet it's proven to be accurate by developments ever since. Within the day of this film coming out, fact-checkers deemed it false. How could they? They spent months putting this together. Came out in May last year. They had experts, top virology experts, bacteriologists, people from the Wuhan laboratory, Chinese experts, military experts, generals, top in their fields in this. And yet some fact checker, who probably had no education, deemed it false and deleted it within a day of it coming out, and then threatened all of us, like myself when we try to share it, with being deplatformed if you attempt to. What kind of fact check is that? And now everything that they said in that documentary has been proven true. Everything. It's been shown that this was a man-made virus. It was originated from a laboratory. In fact, Wuhan laboratory in China, which just happens to be a bacteriological warfare laboratory. It's the biggest bacteriological warfare laboratory in the world. And this laboratory is run by a general in the PLA, that's the People's Liberation Army. And this general, who is in charge of the Wuhan Bacteriological Warfare Laboratory, which was getting American funding thanks to Fauci, he wrote the book in 2013 on asymmetrical warfare, saying we are at war with the United States of America. Now, this is written in 2013. General of the PLA, we are at war with the United States of America, and we cannot beat them in conventional weapons. We need to use asymmetrical warfare, economic warfare, sabotage economy, and bacteriological warfare. And even mentions viruses. Now, all this came out in the film, Tracking Down the Origins of the Wuhan Virus, which was deleted because fact-checkers deemed it was false. And now we find, oh, gee, well, they were right on every point. Chinese Communist Party, the CCP, is not our friend. And notice they had this communist from Ethiopia who's responsible for vast deaths when he completely covered up for the cholera epidemic that killed hundreds of thousands of people and covered it up completely and so on. He is part of the communist dictatorship, Red Terror and all that in China, in Ethiopia. And now China, who's bought and paid for this commie from Ethiopia, makes him head of the World Health Organization. Now, you might think he's a medical doctor. He's not. He's not even a nurse. He doesn't know anything about medical. But he's in charge of World Health Organization, which I think we can now call the Wuhan Health Organization. And no evidence that was stored in a lab, which is exactly what Fauci and co. have said. You need to consider the power of the press. When we speak of the press, we're not just meaning the printing press, published media, but also the film, news media, TV and so on. Russian author Alexander Solzhenitsyn warned of the power of the press within Western countries becoming more powerful than the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. According to what authority has it been elected? To whom is it responsible? In the communist East, a journalist is frankly appointed as a state official. But who granted Western journalists their power? Asks Alexander Solzhenitsyn. Why the conformity, he asked. Solzhenitsyn questioned, why is it that the free press in the West echoes the same united narrative that the one-party dictatorship enforced in the press in the East behind the Iron Curtain? In our country, the lies become not just a moral category, but a pillar of the state. Enormous freedom exists for the press in the West, but not for the readership, because the newspapers mostly give stress and emphasis to those opinions which do not openly contradict their own opinions or that of the general trend. Deception and disinformation are dangerous, and it leads to the violence we've seen in the streets. In the West, Solzhenitsyn said, fashionable trends of thoughts and ideas are carefully separated from those which are not fashionable. There is a dangerous tendency to form a herd. This gives birth to strong mass prejudices and blindness, which is most dangerous in our dynamic era. It works as a sort of petrified armor around people's minds. It's easier to deceive people than just to convince them they've been deceived. As a survivor of the communist Holocaust, I am horrified to witness how my beloved America, Solzhenitsyn says, my adopted country, is gradually becoming transformed into a secularist and atheistic utopia, where communist ideals are glorified and promoted, while Christian values and morality are ridiculed, and increasingly eradicated from the public and social consciousness of our nation. Under the decades-long assault and militant radicalism of many so-called liberal and progressive elites, God has been progressively erased from our public and educational institutions to be replaced with all manner of delusion, perversion, corruption, violence, decadence, and insanity. Now, he said that back in 1983. If that was true then, it's vastly more true today. For your information, if you're not familiar with Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he was an artillery officer in the Red Army. He was a communist. He believed in atheism and all this. He was a complete atheist. And he was condemned to over a decade in the salt mine gulags and Arctic hell holes of Siberia for an unguarded comment he made in a private letter, but everything was censored and checked, where he referred to the chairman, Justice Long, as the moustached one. And for this apparently disrespectful comment to the premier, the chairman, he was sent to Siberia to the Gulag for 10 years. Hard labor. A war hero of the Red Army. But he is a writer. And while he didn't have access to writing utensils or library while he was in the Arctic hellholes, when he came out, he wrote books like One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, which is an absolute brilliant classic, and The Gulag Archipelago. And these two books, and another two of his books, are today separate books prescribed for Russian schools. I mean, that's how good they are. The simple truth of a courageous individual is not to take part in the lie. One word of truth outweighs the world. You can resolve to live your life with integrity. Let your credo be this. Let the lie come into the world. Let it even triumph. But not through me. And yet, we are seeing the news being contorted to conform with an agenda. Editor-in-chief of Breitbart, Alex Marlowe, produced a book which has been published just recently called Breaking the News, Exposing the Establishment Media's Hidden Deals and Secret Corruption. And this details the deception mass media uses to contort every story to fit their fixed agenda. Anything that can be politicized will be politicized. Good news is defined as news that advances the agenda. These appear, of course, on the front page of the newspaper. While bad news, that is news that does not advance the left's desire narrative, is buried deeper than a paper if it's even mentioned at all. And he also speaks of the heroes of the media. An article's heroes would be anyone who advances the globalist, wokeness, skepticism, the leftist, secular, humanist agenda. Now, additional hero points are added or subtracted depending on the individual's race or sex or sexual orientation and or socioeconomic status. So you go up or down the hero or victim status depending on which of these boxes you tick. Now, of course, there are villains of the media too, people who question mandatory vaccinations or mandatory masks or lockdowns or things like that. They would be villains, of course. An article's villain is typically one who stands for biblical, Christian, conservative, pro-life, pro-family values, he exposed in the book. People like Africa Christian Action saying, abortion stops the beating heart, villain. You must not murder, abortion is murder, villain. Choose life, definitely villain. Heroes don't actually need to be real heroes, they can simply be victims. They can even be drug-dealing criminals, but they can make victims of them. Heroes are depicted with glamorous, flattering photographs where possible. Villains receive unflattering photographs or no photographs at all. And you just think of one of the most disgusting villains of the 20th century, this dirty, unwashed communist bank robber, mass murderer, Che Guevara, and yet millions of imbeciles wear his image on their T-shirts. This is a man who boasted that he had personally killed over 4,000 people in cold blood. He was Castro's executioner. He shot women and children in cold blood, without trial, summarily. And this man, who despised blacks, despised homosexuals, despised just about, you know, you can go through the list of all the things that you'd think that the left supports, but it doesn't matter. They love him because he's a commie. Okay, he murdered a lot of people, but ah. Let's put him on a T-shirt, have everyone wearing his T-shirt on, even Christians wearing Che Guevara T-shirts. Now, of course, villains would be people like us. That is a hero. She's a pornographer. That's a pimp. He runs the adultery world. That's a hero. That's a villain. There's another villain holding that kind of thing. Another villain. Terrence, definitely a villain. Dealing with errors and correctness. Errors are acceptable. Okay, Fauci lied and people died, but look, that's not serious because he's on our side and he's promoting globalist agenda. So what if everything he said turned out to be a lie? Okay, hundreds of millions of people didn't die and he changed his position on masks and okay, although he guaranteed that China wasn't lying and that it didn't involve a man-made virus, and this was definitely a natural virus and came from bats and all that. And no, there's no way China is involved in this and so on and so forth. But it doesn't matter, because as long as it advances the cause of secular humanist globalist agenda, then errors don't mind. And if you've got to publish any corrections, they'll be done discreetly, buried deep in a paper, or not at all. Whenever there's a big story in the media, look around for the story they're trying to distract you from. Now, what sort of stories might they want to be distracting you from? Well, take Rand Paul, one of the few voices of sanity in the Senate. From Boston to Zanzibar, there's a worldwide war on Christianity. Christians are being attacked around the world, but you don't hear much about it on evening news, because the answer is not convenient. If it doesn't fit the narrative that we've been told about radical Islam, it doesn't make the news. And so one of the big stories is the persecution of the church. Crushing of, do you know, in the name of dealing with this virus and this lockdown, all over the world we've seen greater persecution enacted on Christians than there has been any other time in our lifetime. Churches are being closed and pastors are being prevented from evangelizing and all sorts of normal Christian workers being crushed in the name of fighting the virus. So a lot of enemies of the church are using this as a wonderful excuse to use some medical dictatorship charade as a cover, a smokescreen for their hostility to Christians. And this is going on in Hindu countries, going on in Islamic countries, communist countries, it's going on in secular humanist Western countries. It's concealing corruption and treachery. Politicians lie. Proof of this is seen in how embarrassing facts are sealed in the name of national security for decades or even a century. Example, I remember this was one of the first books I read as a youngster. I was only 15 years old. That opened my eyes to the other side. Operation Keelhaul. This had been sealed for 30 years. So 1975, out it came. That at the end of the Second World War, the forced repatriation of 3 million Russians, Ukrainians, and other East Europeans by British and American forces at bayonet point, sometimes being shot by the Allies for refusing to move across the bridges or cross the borders into hands of the waiting Soviet NKVD. And this was in accordance with the Yalta Conference Agreement, which was sealed for 30 years. Now, these people, the vast majority of which, had never even been born in Russia. Their families had fled Russia in 1917 because of the Bolshevik Revolution. These were children raised in the West, forced across the border into the hands of the communists by order of Stalin, Churchill, and FDR. And they sealed it for 30 years because it wasn't exactly a very honorable thing. And it wrecked the narrative of we fought for freedom and Christian civilization, democracy and justice and all that sort of thing, when you could do something so disgusting as that. And so this great betrayal was just seal it. Then there's the lies about the Lusitania. You may recall that the sinking of the Lusitania was the single greatest factor in turning neutral America into becoming a belligerent on the side of the Allies. The files concerning the sinking of the Lusitania on the 7th of May 1915 were sealed for 60 years in Britain and in America. Sealed. All the naval records, the whole lot. The deceit, the intrigue, the treachery, the cold-blooded, callous disregard for lives, for law, or for truth, involved in a scheme to bring the United States into the war on the Allied side are shocking. And it goes from the top of the First Lord Admiralty, Winston Churchill, all the way through the British structure, all the way through the American structure, from Woodrow Wilson down. In fact, on this basis, the Secretary of State of the United States of America, who was a dedicated Christian, he resigned in protest over this disgusting charade and this throwing away these lives, sacrificing lives for the greater good, to convince the bulk of Americans who didn't want to get involved in Europe's wars to get involved. The Lusitania files had been sealed for six decades. I remember when this book came out, I read this book, The Lusitania, by Colin Simpson, and when I read this in the 1970s, it also shattered my confidence in the goodness of the Allied cause. Because, I mean, our side, my dad fought all 6 years in the Second World War in the Royal Artillery and the British side. And, wow, I didn't think our side did disgusting things like this. First of all, the Imperial German Embassy warned publicly, placed adverts in American newspapers that travellers intending to embark on the Atlantic voyage are reminded that a state of war exists between Germany and the Allies and Great Britain and the Allies in the zone of water, including that adjacent to the British Isles. In accordance with formal notice given, vessels flying the flag of Great Britain or any of the Allies are liable to destruction in those waters, and people who travel those areas do so at their own risk. Now, the Lusitania was the largest ship in the world at that time, considering the Titanic had sunk just a few years before, but that was also unsinkable. The Lusitania was colossal. Now, it had sister ships who were also armed and owned by the Royal Navy. Although it was officially Cunard, it was actually built to the specifications of the Royal Navy. The Royal Navy paid for more than half of the cost of the building, because the building of these ships had to be specially to naval specifications in the event of war. And Cunard agreed to the agreement that the Lusitanian sister ships would be modified and had all the different adaptations, including secret decks with the, where the guns could pop up, 15-inch guns and so on. These were not your normal passenger ships. They were passenger ships during peacetime, but they were warships during wartime, and they had not just massive holds to be able to transport contraband, but they were armed. And the British government had a policy of flying false flags. They would fly American and other flags of neutral countries, including Spain or whatever, in order to be able to confuse the counter-blockade. Britain was doing a hunger blockade on Germany and Austria, and so Germany was doing a U-boat blockade of Britain in retaliation. And Germany said, any time you stop the hunger blockade, we will stop the U-boat blockade. You stopping food reaching us, we will stop ships reaching you with weapons from the United States. America was neutral. America wasn't meant to be sending weapons, but America was sending vast quantities of weapons illegally against their own laws at that time with the knowledge of President Woodrow Wilson and so on. This ship, at the moment that it was sunk, was carrying millions of rounds of ammunition, thousands of shells. That's why the largest ship in the world at that time was sunk by a single torpedo. Single torpedo strikes a passenger ship, it would have limped a little bit, but it would have got to port under normal steam. And they only used one torpedo. They had no intention to sink or destroy the ship, but just to remind it that it's not meant to be in those waters. One torpedo didn't take down a big ship. In fact, the same U-boat that had been involved in patrolling these waters had much smaller ships that they put several torpedoes into, and then had to surface and use their surface gun in order to sink this vessel. And even then, many of them didn't sink, because it's not easy to sink a hulking great big ship. And this had multiple watertight containers like the Titanic. Impossible to sink with just one watertight container filled with water, even if it had, or two or three. It could survive, in fact, three of its watertight areas flooded, and it would have still managed. And yet, what happened was this one shot, unluckily, hit the vast amount of weaponry that was stored on the sides. And this was a defect in design, which came out in the study. And I've just gone through this book again on Simpson, on the Lusitania, this year. And absolutely staggering that on every level, the bad designs, the warnings, the suppression of truth, and the factors when this was brought to Admiralty's attention. And they knew about the fact that other ships like this, the moment there's just the slightest leak, all that you've got on the side, the ship will list to the side. You won't be able to launch the lifeboats on the one side because it's listed too much. You won't be able to launch the lifeboats the other side either because of the list, if the ship lists 15, 20 degrees, which immediately it did because of the way they had all their storage on the side of it. And the design of the ship, which was demanded by the Royal Navy, now, they knew about this because they'd had a problem with one of these earlier ships, and so at this time it was brought to First Lord Admiralty, Winston Churchill, and he said, no, we don't make any modifications. This would be very good. If the Lusitania gets sunk, it could bring America into the war on our side. And the American government wanted to come into the war as well. Just the problem was 85% of the American electorate didn't want to go into a war. So, you know, obviously the government had to persuade the people, and so the American government of Woodrow Wilson was negotiating with the British government, says, how can we get our population involved in the war? Well, if we could get one of our ships sunk. So they were making no secret of the fact that they were loading weaponry into these ships, total breach of international law. They were going into a war zone, and the passengers were not aware, or most of them weren't aware, some were, that it was a ship floating on vast amounts of explosives. And one torpedo took down this whole thing, and the people in the submarine were just beyond horrified. But the thing that's even more disgusting, I mean, it's just one big scandal, one after the other. The ship was going, now this ship was one of the fastest ships in the world. And it could go vastly faster than any U-boat could, even surfaced. And a U-boat underwater couldn't go more than 4 knots anyway. But on the surface, it might go up to 12 knots. This ship, the Lusitania, could go 28, 32, 34 knots. So it could, and the U-boat sees this sub, sees the Lusitania coming too far. We've got no chance getting it. And at that moment, the Admiralty, First Lord and Admiralty, under Winston Churchill, signals him to change direction and has the ship change direction to come right in front of where the U-boat was. And the Admiralty knew where the U-boat was. There was just one U-boat in the whole area. And they had it turn and sent it directly in front of the U-boat. So the U-boat didn't even have to chase it. It literally came to them. And they were going to send one torpedo in, which is all they did. And of course, nobody believed that the Lusitania could be sunk by one torpedo. And so there were lies. They came up to, there were 3-4 torpedoes fired into it and so on and so forth, which still wouldn't have sunk it. Even if you had 4 torpedoes hit it, it couldn't have sunk because of all these watertight compartments. But it was the design of the ship, the explosives in it, and the fact that the whole side was packed with these explosives, that when one torpedo hits, the entire ship explodes from within, the whole ship listed to the side, and you couldn't launch the lifeboats, and the whole thing was just a catastrophe. And the people concerned were just suppressed, they were threatened, they were lied to, and all the files were sealed for 60 years. And this was not just a British war crime. The American government was fully complicit in the whole thing too, because it was designed to kill American citizens to bring America into the war. Then you get ultra-deception, the secret war. I read through this book, Max Hastings' Secret War, a couple of years ago. When GCHQ, that's the General Code and Cipher School Headquarters, which is the main code-breaking part of British intelligence in Britain, MI6 department, when they cracked the Enigma code, which is the world's first computer, which Germans considered uncrackable. But, you know, if you've got a computer that scrambles the code into millions of options, someone else could build a computer that can unravel those millions of code options. So they thought it was safe. It wasn't. For the whole war, Britain was reading all the codes of Germans and knew ahead of time what they were doing. Kriegsmarine, Luftwaffe, Wehrmacht, the whole lot, they had. It was an open, they knew as soon as the commanders got the instructions, they knew the deployments, they knew the orders, they knew everything about it, and this was considered such an explosive secret, it was called Ultra, and was sealed for 60 years. Now, these facts only came out fairly recently, and the book, The Secret War, was written on the base of all the new information that came out as a result of The Secret War, and it reveals a pattern of deception that a general writing in the foreword says every history book, every film and documentary on the Second World War will have to be rewritten in the light of the previously suppressed facts. The Secret War, spies, codes and guerrillas, 1939-1945. It's staggering. But when you learn of the lies, the deception, the sacrificing of hundreds of thousands of lives for deception, and it's not a pretty picture. It doesn't fit with the Hollywood narrative. Suppressing history. When government lies, democracy dies. And so do people, by the way. President Herbert Hoover, this is not a conspiracy theorist. This is a Nobel Peace Prize winning American president who saved lives in the First World War, well, before he was president, that is, in Belgium in particular, and helping the people who were starving from the blockades. And he did a lot to help Finland when they were attacked by the Russians and channeling aid. He was a real humanitarian. But President Herbert Hoover wrote a blockbuster book, Freedom Betrayed, Secret History of the Second World War and Its Aftermath. This was suppressed until 2011. I've got this book. I've studied this book. It's staggering. Written by America's 31st president, Herbert Hoover, the president immediately before Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He exhaustively documents the deliberate deceit and the treacherous policies of Franklin Delano Roosevelt and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill in conspiring to save Stalin's Soviet Union. If you thought that the normal narrative that Germany invaded Poland, therefore Britain and France declared war on Germany, and America got reluctantly dragged into the Second World War later, not at all. According to Herbert Hoover's exhaustive documentation, he has, it's a blockbuster. No wonder it was suppressed for so many years. If this had come out, and this is not just about the Second World War, it's also about the Korean War and the Vietnam War and the treachery of the US governments. You can drop this book in a liberal's foot and he will limp. It's over 900 pages and it's got massive amounts of documentation. He documents how Franklin Delano Roosevelt's government conspired to bring about the Second World War. They put Poland up to not negotiating with Germany about the Danzig Corridor, not handing back the 97% German-speaking city of Danzig, which had been fraudulently stolen from Germany in the Versailles Treaty at the end of the First World War, and put Poland up to not being allies with Germany and fighting Russia with all kinds of bribes and promises which they never fulfilled. And it's FDR's government that put up Britain to give a war guarantee to Poland, which Britain had never given to anyone else in all their history. Britain's never before given a war guarantee to any country, and Poland was never Britain's ally before the Second World War. Unilaterally, without being asked, Britain gave a war guarantee to Poland, which was, by the way, a military dictatorship, not a democracy. And, in fact, you won't see a picture of the leader of Poland because he looked very much like Adolf Hitler, right down to the uniforms and the moustache and the whole thing. So Poland was a dictatorship, multi-dictatorship, but, you know, that doesn't fit the narrative. Don't think about that. Forget about that fact. And Poland was put up to picking a war with Germany so that Britain and France could go to war with Germany. And it was against Poland's interests, against France's interests, was against Britain's interests. But the US government managed to lie and deceive and promise enough to get them into it. And of course, at the end, the result was what? Destruction of Europe and the rise of the Soviet Union in the United States of America over the ashes of Europe. What Herbert Hoover's exposed in this blockbuster book explains why this book was suppressed until 2011. Until virtually everyone involved in that debacle had died off. They dragged the countries into a ruinous war, planned in the White House and the State Department, which betrayed 15 countries and over 100 million Christians into the hands of Stalin Soviet communism. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. Now, we've touched Lend-Lease in another time, and I've given a whole presentation on Freedom Betrayed, Herbert Hoover's Secret History of the Second World War, so I won't go into that now, but interesting to note the quote by Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in politics nothing happens by accident. If it happens, you can bet it was planned that way. And very appropriate coming from him, because the way he acts like, oh, this is such a surprise, and we haven't even touched on Pearl Harbor, which he knew about well ahead and wanted, and they just didn't bother to inform the commander of either the Naval base or the Air Force base or the Army base in Pearl Harbor that the attack was on the way. They cracked the Japanese codes. They knew what was coming. They knew when it was coming. They knew everything ahead of time and just sat back and did nothing about it. And this has been exposed on many levels, but that's another story. Instead, by partnering with Joseph Stalin, the worst mass-murdering anti-Christian pagan in the history of the world, to defeat Germany, Roosevelt and Churchill gave communism legitimacy and provided the essential support that prevented the Soviet Union from collapsing as Operation Barbarossa was launched in 1941. By November 1943, secret commitments by the Allies at their Tehran conference constituted the greatest blows to human freedom in this century. I mean, I'm quoting from Herbert Hoover here. Betraying all these wonderful countries, from Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Romania, all the countries in Yugoslavia, Croatia, Slovenia, all the way through Macedonia, Bulgaria, Albania, these countries, not to mention Ukraine and the other parts, Belarus, behind Iron Curtain, betrayed deliberately by Stalin and Churchill in the name of fighting for freedom and democracy and Christian civilization, all that. They betrayed. And these are documented facts, but they were sealed well for a generation. While they promised them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. Then there's Silencing the Attempted Peacemaker, a book I read a few years ago. Hess, Hitler, and Churchill, The Real Turning Point of the Second World War, a Secret History by Peter Padfield. Fascinating. A war hero of the First World War, Rudolf Hess, who was born in Alexandria under the British flag in England. He was an Anglophile. He was very pro-English and fluent in English, which is why he was chosen Deputy Führer just under Hitler. He flies to Scotland in 1941 in a Messerschmitt 110, and he parachutes. First time in his life he's ever parachuted. Even though he is an Air Force war hero, ace in the First World War, he had never parachuted before. He parachutes at night into Scotland in order to deliver peace terms before the launch of Operation Barbarossa against the Soviet Union. And basically promising to, and we know this because the people that the translations come out, even though Hess's files have been sealed, and they're still sealed. And Hess was not allowed to speak to any journalist, any historian, anyone, not even his family. He couldn't talk to anyone about the Second World War, anything he knew. And he's the last surviving leader of the Third Reich, and he had an archive of information that would have been fascinating for any historian, sealed, not allowed to be spoken of. And the interrogation files on Rudolf Hess are still sealed 80 years later, since his historic flight to Scotland to negotiate peace and an end to war between Britain and Germany. But we know what was in it because people who did the translation were able to testify later, and that's in the book on The Real Turning Point, Second World War. Germany withdrawing from France, Belgium, Netherlands, all in the western areas, Norway, the whole lot, withdrawing back to pre-1939 war boundaries, just give us a free hand in the east against the Soviet Union, lift the naval blockade, stop bombing us, and we'll have peace. We don't even want our colonies back in Africa that you took in the First World War. Just peace in the west, leave us alone to deal with the Soviet Union, not asking for anything else. That means every soldier who died after 1941 in Western Europe, D-Day, Arnhem, Bridge too far, everyone who died in the aerial bombardments, totally unnecessary because they were offered that free if they just stop bombing, blockading, and let Germany deal with the clear and present danger of the Soviet Union, which is at that very moment preparing to invade Western Europe, and which is why Operation Barbarossa was the biggest United Nation effort seen to that date, where there were volunteers from all over, even from Norway and Sweden and Switzerland and South Africa and Spain, countries that were neutral, not even involved in the war, were volunteering and part of the anti-Bolshevik force going into Eastern Europe, going into Russia to stop the Soviet Union's attempt to attack the West. Still, all of this still sealed. This marks the spot where brave, heroic Rudolf Hess landed by parachute on the night of 10th of May 1941, seeking to end the war between Britain and Germany. Imagine how many millions of lives could have been spared if the war in the West could have stopped in 1941. There are other books which were able to be published on the basis of unsealed documents that have been sealed for 30 years, like The Shocking Truth of the Mass Deaths of Disarmed German Soldiers and Civilians under General Eisenhower's Command. This is a French-Canadian's book, James Bach, and Eisenhower's Death Camps, where he literally rounded up the disarmed enemy forces, didn't call them POWs, prisoners of war, called them disarmed enemy forces, and listed deaths under other losses, did an accountant's job to conceal 1.1 million German soldiers' deaths after the war in American prison camps. So that's more German soldiers died in prison camps after the war than died in combat during the war. Crimes and Mercies documents the deaths, by starvation mostly, but also by abuse, of 14 million German civilians at the end of the Second World War, also written by James Bach. Hellstorm, one of the most disturbing books I've ever gone through in my life. Absolutely horrific. Thomas Goodrich's Hellstorm, the biggest cover-up in history, the atrocities committed in Germany after the Second World War. There have been others speaking about it and giving the details of the worst crimes in the history of the world, what was foisted on the people at the end of the Second World War and covered up by Hollywood. Because Hollywood only demonizes the Germans, but they don't ever let you know how they were victimized and what was done to them after the war. Protecting the propaganda narrative. Who's heard of the Warren Report? Well, the official report on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963 are sealed for over 75 years, only accessible to public in 2039. Until then, you must believe that a single lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, with a second-rate Italian-made bolt-action rifle from the Second World War, managed to do the impossible feat that not the finest marksmen have been able to do, from a window from behind, managed to fire so many shots in such a short space of time. It's just nobody else can do that. I mean, and he was a moderate marksman. He was in the Marines, but he was average. He was not a specialist. But specialists can't do what he's purported to have done. And they're saying a single gunman, whereas the evidence, even the film evidence, and the film evidence was suppressed for years. We only got to see the Zapruder civilian footage, which was confiscated by the FBI years later. And it clearly shows a bullet hitting President Kennedy from the front and his head being flung back. And how could a man up in a bookstore window behind him have his head flung back with violent shot to the front, with the whole back part of his head coming off onto the back of the car, which is what Jackie Kennedy, his wife, climbed out to bring that part of the skull, which was on the back bumper of the car. She wasn't climbing to get out, she was climbing there to retrieve his part of the skull. All the lies told about this, and by the way, Lee Harvey Oswald, he was an American soldier who was tasked to learn Russian. Then he defected to Russia. And he renounced his American citizenship. And then later on, he decided to return to America. And he had no problem being accepted back in America, even though he had done what is considered treason. And he had presumably given all the secrets he could have given. And why was he tasked to learn Russian in the first place anyway? He looks like he is set up for the whole job. But he comes back and then he gets a job in a sensitive defense industry position where he should have been on a list of known communists and so on. He gets arrested in a high-profile thing of having argument in the streets where there's a picture of him handing out leaflets which has his name and address on it to set up the fact that he's a known anti-communist campaigning against Kennedy. And he's plainly being set up in every which way. And the whole reaction of it. It's unlikely that Lee Harvey Oswald was even part of the plot, except as a patsy being set up to take the blame for it. And you can just see, but the Warren Commission, which is, it's named after the Supreme Court Justice, the cover-up they did, how they could expect to sell to the people, this is a lone man, gunman assassination. If that's all true, why have they sealed the files till 2039, for goodness sakes? This happened in 1963. And even if he had been the one who did that, a lone gunman, isn't it interesting that he gets assassinated before it comes to court, and then the man who assassinates him dies suddenly, and all the key witnesses die in something like 40 of them, in either car accidents, robberies, murders, and so on. And so within a space of just a few months, you've got something like 40 people connected to the whole thing killed. This is a cover. Now, what the exact truth is, who knows? But the Warren Commission probably knew, but they've sealed those files for 75 years. Now, when government seal files, you know they are covering something. And then you get the FBI files on Martin Luther King Jr. Now, it so happened that the head of the FBI, who is J. Edgar Hoover, not to be confused with present Herbert Hoover. This is J. Edgar Hoover. He's the head of the FBI. He didn't trust Martin Luther King Jr. He knew he was a known communist sympathizer. So he had his rooms tapped. Motels, hotels, offices, anywhere, wherever he was. And they've got files, as in transcripts of what was said, done, photographs, all sorts of things. These files, by court order, have been sealed till 2027. Now, what's in those files? Well, we've got a bit of an idea because people like Garrison, who's second charge of FBI, said, in a lifetime of dealing with the sleaziest characters on earth, I would put Martin Luther King in one of the 10 worst, possibly the top 4 worst reprobates I've ever had to deal with. And this man was a liberal who supported the agenda that MLK stood for. But so that's Garrow, who is the deputy chief of the FBI. But J. Edgar Hoover called MLK the most notorious liar in the country. Now, some of the highlights or lowlights of his repertoire would be, he is a known communist. There's a lot of evidence for that. He is a woman beater. He is a plagiarist. His entire doctorates have been discovered to have been totally plagiarized. There's virtually not an original thought anywhere. Didn't attribute the quotes. And so his doctorate is fraudulent. His name is fraudulent. His name's Michael King. Never was Martin Luther King. It was Michael King. He is subversive. He is definitely known to be involved with communists and so on. He is an adulterer. He is a sexual deviant. He had orgies with church money from council churches to buy multiple prostitutes at the same time. The man was, in fact, a sexual pervert. And so this is the one they've got streets named after, avenues named after, holidays named after, and so on and so forth. And when Senator Jesse Helms requested access for the senators to have access to FBI files that they could make the decision on whether to have this as a national holiday or not, he was even denied. Even a senator, head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Jesse Helms, not even he could have access to those files. So Americans are celebrating and idolizing a man who they're not allowed to know the truth about. Now, I was at a Christian college, university graduation just across the street. They used the church across the way there for their graduation service. And in the graduation of 3 hours, I never heard one quote from the Bible, one single quote from any Christian leader. There wasn't a quote from the apostles or Spurgeon, Andrew, nothing. The only quotes that I got from every speaker, including the Chancellor, was Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and attributing quotes to him that other people said long before him. But anyway, they love to attribute all sorts of things to him to make him sound profound. And they even attribute things to him that were said by Jesus. And like, well, why not quote the primary source? And then they quoted also from Gandhi, from Voltaire, for goodness sakes, can you imagine that? And Invictus, and Mandela, and so on and so forth. So I went afterwards to the Chancellor and I said, you do know that Martin Luther King was a plagiarist and a pervert and an adulterer and a communist. And he said, yes. I said, then why do you quote so positively from him? He said, Peter, if I don't quote from him, people think I'm a racist. I said, well, now they know you're stupid and you're gutless. This is the way it is in the world. It doesn't matter what the truth is. There's a narrative and you've just got to follow it. And so there's a continual suppressing of inconvenient facts. I don't know if you remember the horrible Dunblane massacre, where 16 children and 2 adults were murdered by this gunman, apparently this gunman. But we don't know everything about it because the police inquiry files are sealed for 100 years. But we do know that this horrible, horrible atrocity was used to disarm what was left of anyone who had arms in Britain, taking away all sorts of weapons, even though we don't know really what was behind all this. And there was a lord in the House of Lords who said the Dunblane inquiry was a cover-up and the peers were bullied to keep me quiet, says Lord Burton, who's an ex-Mason's leader. And so they actually had, by court order, all the files to deal with this inquiry sealed for 100 years. So, if you're still around in, when was this? 1996, is it? So if you're still around 2096, you can hopefully find out what really happened there. So what happens when public servants lie to the public? Not that they call it lies, they might call it acceptable paradoxes and deception operations or whatever. But there was a book written by a senior intelligence officer, Peter Wright. He is the former assistant director of MI5. Military Intelligence 5. So MI5 deals with internal security, MI6 deals with external security in Britain. So MI5's number two. He wrote his book Spycatcher, which basically was exposing. Now we know what's in it because Wilde was banned in Britain and they tried to try him completely and prevent him. He fled to Australia where he was able to get the book published. So the book's available. And in fact, we've read it. And basically what he's doing is he's pointing out that the head of MI5, Sir Roger Hollis, from 1945 to 1968, he worked for the KGB. He was one of the Cambridge Five. And the details have come out. So we know of the five now. These are top MI5 and MI6 people. Burgess, McLean, Philby, Blunt, Pancross. And Yuri Modin published a book on MI5 Cambridge friends. These are five British agents, graduates of Cambridge, who were high up in British intelligence, who were all controlled by the KGB. But the sixth one was not mentioned because they've still got him hidden. But it was Spycatcher, Peter Wright, who brought out even Sir Roger Hollis, the head. All governments lie. And we have a new book out called Lies the Government Told You, Myth, Power, and Deception in American History. Now, this isn't just true for America. It's true for Britain. It's true for South Africa. It's true all over the world. Every government in the world probably has massive amounts of lies, with possible exception of Switzerland. Take the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which was the pretext for America entering the Vietnam War. 50,000 American soldiers died, not counting how many were crippled there. But the incident on which they launched this war never happened. And it's been proven later it's a false flag operation. When politicians decide to withhold from the public access to files on famous people and pivotal events in history, know that you are being lied to. Facts are not suppressed and sealed and destroyed and hidden in order to protect the truth. If these things showed people like FDR and Churchill in shining light, then you can be sure that they want everyone to read it, publish it, broadcast the world. But facts are hidden in order to protect lies and propaganda and the reputation of war criminals. That's why General George Patton said politicians are the lowest form of life on earth. And liberal Democrats are the lowest form of politicians. And he should know. And he got assassinated straight after helping to win the war for them when he started to discover uncomfortable truths. And he said, and we know because his daughter published the Patton papers from his letters back home. And he said he's resigning his commission. He's not retiring because if he retires, he can still be under military law and court-martialed. He's resigning his commission. He's coming back to fight the real enemy in Washington, D.C. and expose what's been going on in this war. He said, we've been fighting the wrong enemy. The Germans were never our enemies. The Soviets were never our friends. We've destroyed the best race in Europe. This is disgusting. And he was outraged about Eisenhower's camp. He said, I killed Germans in battle. Eisenhower's killing them as defenseless prisoners of war in their prison camps. And he was on his way, and he gets killed in a car accident where nobody else in the car gets even hurt. And later on, the stories come out. A person came and admitted in 1979, a senior member of the OSS. He was tasked by Truman to assassinate. On the day before he was resigning his commission, General Patton gets murdered by his own side. So he understood politicians lie. So if we lie to the government, it's a felony. But if the government lies to us, it's just politics. Our first book on the homosexual agenda in South Africa, called The Pink Agenda, was banned. 2001, first book to be banned in New South Africa. And we campaigned and got it unbanned. So it was the first book to be unbanned in New South Africa too. And we've reprinted it now in the name of The Rise of the KGB and the Pink Inquisition. Now, when they're trying to suppress things, there's a reason. Government censorship seeks to protect you from reality. Think of removing Ascension Day from the calendar. Among the first acts of the ANC government in South Africa was to abolish prayer in Parliament and to cancel Ascension Day as a public holiday. This is very significant because the Ascension deals with authority. Jesus Christ has risen from the dead and he's ascended into heaven. He's reigning on high and he's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Every power is under him. He is above every principality and authority on earth. He will come again to judge the living and the dead. It's understandable that secular humanist Marxists who do not want to acknowledge the authority of Christ or his great commission or recognize that one day their idols will topple and their lies will be exposed. Charles Colson said the Bible banned, burned, and beloved is more widely read and more frequently attacked than any other book in history. Why is the Bible the most banned book in the world? Banned in something like 60 countries in the world. Why would that be? Now, at the castle, the oldest building in the southern hemisphere is still being used. We always used to have every flag that the castle had been under. And that was on the wall. And somewhere along the line, some Marxist in government decided to remove all the historic flags. Why? It's a historic monument. Dumping, deleting, pulping, and incinerating history. The ANC government has literally had tens of thousands of history books removed from public library shelves and either sent to be pulped or incinerated. And I know this because I've spoken in the Heritage Library at the Fort Chicken Monument. Where do you get all these books from? I've got 5,000 books. So we got a tip off that to get down to Pretoria Library in a hurry, they were taking all the history books off the shelves to dump them in dumpsters to go to the incinerator or to be pulped. And we got there and we salvaged a whole lot. We couldn't get them all, but whatever we could get in our buckies, we salvaged. You can go to Hemingway's bookshop, which is in Hermanus, one of the finest second-hand bookshops around. Where do you get these books from? Cape Town Library, we got a tip. They were throwing out the history books and we got them from the dumpsters outside the library before they didn't save them all, but they saved all that they could fit into their bucky. But libraries are being devastated by fire. During the recent wildfires in Cape Town, the 1.2 million volume Jaguar Library in the University of Cape Town was devastated by a fire from within the stone building. Even though the perimeter of the University of Cape Town was not breached by the wildfire. I mean, Jaguar Library is there. Here's the burn area. How is it possible that Jaguar Library, right there, gets burned out from within, but all the buildings on the perimeter were not affected? How is that possible? We expect to believe that the gutting of this extremely valuable library is somehow connected to the bushfire, which didn't even breach the trees or perimeter buildings of the university campus. Now, several other libraries in this country have been destroyed by fire as well, including in the University of Durban-Westville. But although the library was destroyed, the Chancellor said at least no serious damage was done. Veritas venit, truth conquers. The battle cry of the Hussites. Professor Jan Hus, rector of Prague University and reformer, declared, "Vincit omnia veritas, truth conquers all." After he was condemned to be burned at the stake by a trumped-up illegal trial that violated the safe conduct that he had been guaranteed by the Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire, Jan Hus observed, "You can burn my books, you can burn me, but you cannot burn the truth. Truth conquers all." That's why our Lord Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." So, comments, questions, observations?
Is the law in America that makes it legal to lie to the American public?
You would have thought.
No, that isn't actually law. That was
wrong. Well, then they can impeach Fauci for more than just lying, because he's guilty of perjury too. He's lied before the Senate. And it's been found out that Fauci's proved it. Because when he's denied certain things, Rand Paul could hold up, "This is what your email said, and this is what the Wuhan Library said, and they thanked you for the funding for this," and so on and so forth. So he's guilty of perjury. I'd like to see what happens to a New World Order character like Fauci, because if there's any justice in the world, a man who caused so much chaos should face justice. But don't hold your breath. It may not happen in a hurry, at least not in this administration. Other observations?
You mentioned China at Wuhan lab, and this virus is obviously made in its asymmetrical war, I get that. But how come they see we getting, how come our governments all over the world are assisting them so nicely? You know, to a man, to like every minute department you can think of, wear masks, take a vaccine. Is that
okay?
China's fault or is that our fault?
Well, in many cases, you've got to know that China, the Communist Party of China, that is, owns much of the media in the West. And they own, it seems, a lot of the key people in the UN, certainly they own the World Health Organization, the Wuhan Health Organization. But it's more than that. It's that the World Bank is offering bribes if you will follow their agenda. The President of Belarus said he was given a straight bribe. $500 billion if you'll shut down your economy. Hard lockdown. He said, our economy's worth more than $500 billion. And they said, oh no, but this money's at your discretion, what you do with it. That's a bribe. And our government also said they got the $500 million, what do they call it? Solidarity fund, COVID relief fund. What happened to it?
But didn't that come from
gone.
Oppenheimer and Rupert?
The Solidarity Fund did, yes. I'm confusing the two. There was an International Monetary Fund grant of $500 million, which he was saying, that, and then he's asking for a Solidarity Fund to contribute more to add to that. But they lost the whole lot somehow. I think it went to the ANC Entertainment Allowance. Yeah, I've just got a few others of our things that we didn't even touch the Catan Forest Massacre, sealed for 70 years. 7 years. And the history books, in many cases, still have the lie in it. But we won't even go to the assassination of General Sikorsky, head of the Polish government in exile, who was assassinated for wanting investigation of the Catan Forest Massacre. And the telephone records between, and all the communications between Winston Churchill, Prime Minister of Britain, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt, President of America, during the time, June, July, of the assassination. He's actually assassinated on the 4th of July in 1943. All of those communications are still sealed. Almost 80 years later, still sealed. I mean, we don't know when they're ever going to open those up, because, you know, we know what we're going to find. But Poland knows for sure. My eyes have been opened to this whole thing from my friends in Poland. But we are really probably the most lied to population in the history of mankind. I don't think there's ever been a society where there's been more censorship or more lying. Any other comments or observations? Which is why we have sought to launch the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism, to have alternative media sources, website, bank of articles and insights to get people to question the official narrative. And chose Henry Morton Stanley, who is the greatest journalist of all time, I would say. And I think we need a whole new generation of investigative journalists, because what I've brought out here is just based on a few of my readings of different books that have come from studying files that were sealed for decades, and then someone had the patience to wade through and find out what actually was it that they were hiding when those files were finally made available to the public. But if they've lied to us in the past, you can bet they're lying to us today. It's not like governments have changed.